You're listening to the Israel Connection on JAIR Community Radio, streaming over the internet at j-air.com.au. My name is David Schulberg, bringing you another episode of this weekly radio program that provides analysis and insight with important interviews and discussion about Israel. Australia has experienced one of its deadliest mass shootings in its history on Sunday, when two gunmen opened fire on the first night of Hanukkah at Bondi in Sydney. 16 people are dead, including one of the attackers. At least 38 people were injured, including two police officers. In a moment, I will be speaking with Gillian Siegel, the envoy appointed by the Australian government to combat anti-Semitism. In our conversation which follows, we will talk about the spate of anti-Semitism in Australian society today and what can be done to address it. In particular, we will probe the work that she has been doing, consider the report that Gillian has produced, and discover what she is trying to achieve in her role as the envoy to combat anti-Semitism. Well, I can perfectly appreciate that you have an awful lot on your plate right now. I'm grateful for the fact that you're actually speaking with me on the Israel Connection.
Absolutely.
Do you remember when we spoke last in 2016?
Do you know, I don't. Please remind me. But my goodness, weren't they different days?
You were the New South Wales chair of the Australia-Israel Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, it was with that hat on. Okay.
And you were.
Do you know that very sadly, tragically, but hopefully not tragically, I suppose, just very sadly, one of my fellow directors of the AICC New South Wales from those days was badly injured on Sunday night. She's in hospital. Very, very unwell, but hopefully will recover.
Yes, it is absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. The interview we're doing now was arranged before the massacre that took place at Bondi Beach on the first night of Hanukkah. How has this horrendous event changed your feelings about your role as our envoy to combat anti-Semitism? And has it changed your focus on what you see are the top priorities from your own perspective?
I think that's a very, very important question. I think it has clarified in my mind that this fight to push anti-Semitism to the absolute margins of our society is even more essential and important and urgent. And I think you could have no other conclusion other than that from Sunday's events, that what we all recognised was growing anti-Semitism. Sunday crystallised the fact that it is absolutely so dangerous for the Jewish community, so dangerous for the general community in terms of this being the country that we thought it was, that we have to act with great resolve and urgency to fight anti-Semitism. It's rather like when we think about a war analogy of fighting in the hills and fighting on the beaches and fighting everywhere. It is a multi-pronged thing that we have to do. And that is what's outlined in the plan that I handed down, that the plan considered where anti-Semitism was in our society and where we needed to tackle it on many fronts, that there's no one answer to it because it's become part of our almost culture. It's been normalized, not in Australia alone, but in other Western countries. There's been no doubt across the West foreign interference, but this is our responsibility now to fight. So it's increased my resolve and it's increased the urgency of it.
Now, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has been asked about the delayed implementation of your report that you announced more than 5 months ago. In his defence, Albanese has pointed out that he has introduced new laws against racial hatred, laws against doxing and the use of Nazi symbols, and that he has made financial contributions to social cohesion and security for the Jewish community. However, we hear many who believe that this is a distraction from the central focus of what is really necessary, the proper implementation of your report. No doubt you have had plenty of work on your plate. So what do you see as regards this delay in the acceptance of many of the details in your report?
Well, I think you're right to point out some of the things that have been done. And there are other things have been done that not necessarily in his list. I've done an enormous amount of work with universities both in terms of new procedures and policies and education and various actions that they've, many of them have taken, I can't say all of them, but many of them have taken to counter the hatred on campuses and to make Jewish students feel safe. And that is an area where I've recently announced the appointment of Professor Craven as my independent assessor, and he's doing a report card on every university as to how they are dealing with those recommendations that came out of the Joint Parliamentary Committee and also my recommendations, and we'll see how that's gone. Now, that has had strong support from government, where government has been necessary, like from the education minister and from the regulator. And indeed, the government put in place the student ombudsman, the National Student Ombudsman, to take complaints. So government has acted there. And it may not be something that the Prime Minister is so across, because education minister's been the primary one. But there's an awful lot that we've been gearing up to do, like education about anti-Semitism. It's my very strong view that general education about race hatred cannot deal with anti-Semitism sufficiently. It's necessary for the country, and we need to understand what happened in history. So we need to study the Holocaust. But anti-Semitism education has to tackle where anti-Semitism comes from, the myths, the tropes, the fact that all these people can believe things about Jews that are not true, and that needs specific education. So we've worked on education modules and started to roll them out. For example, the Department of Home Affairs has put up the Immigration Department as the first place that this will be rolled out. But this is where Sunday's events need to galvanise us all, and I'm hoping that the Prime Minister appreciates this as well. We need to focus on this with increased vigour and roll out education throughout parts of the community, including the public sector, with urgency, with much greater focus, many more resources devoted to it, and tackle this underlying scourge. We also need additional law reform. You've pointed out that government has passed a whole raft of laws, both state and federal, but it's also clear that that's not enough. We do need to stop the hate speech. And as I said on Sunday night in a press statement, I'm sure you've seen, that I think hate words, hate speech leads to hate action. We saw that in Germany in the 30s. We've seen it in other places. People need to not be bombarded by hate speech, which says kill the Jews, globalize the Intifada. All of that is completely antithetical to Australian values, and we need to make that clear through our laws and through our judicial system. I'm hoping that the government will work with me in relation to further law reform. Education, as I've said, throughout a community, but public sector and parts of community like the health system, the arts sector, etc. And on other initiatives, we need to really look at migration issues. We need to look at social media, which has become a great vector for hate, and what further controls we can impose on social media. And we need to counter what's on social media through education, as I've said. So a lot of things in the plan and a lot of detail in the implementation of the plan. I am hoping the government will now be focused very much on a strong response and on implementation. Can I just say, I'm not just hoping. That sounds like something too vague. I am expecting it. Okay, it has to happen now, because that would be an appropriate response to this tragedy, and also to the necessity that the government, I'm sure, feels that we have to correct what has happened and rebind Australians together.
Yeah, well, that's the rhetoric we're hearing. I've heard Penny Wong speaking this morning on the ABC, saying almost nothing to questions that were put to her about concerns that have been expressed that the government has been not doing enough to deal with anti-Semitism. I've listened to Alex Ripchin from the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, who criticises the government that's claiming these things that it's been doing, which have nothing really to do with the propulsion that's expected to come from your report. These are just things that were happening before. When you talk about law reform, we've seen laws introduced in states and also federally, but can you tell me if there's been one single prosecution under any of the laws that have been introduced? When I spoke to Louis Waller yesterday, Professor Waller at the Hanukkah function, and I put that question to him, he refused to comment, but somebody next to him said that basically it's a big fat zero when it comes to the number of prosecutions that have been
No,
introduced.
can I just correct you there? Because that is not true. Okay. I can't give you the exact figure. We can do some research, but we've been generally following the prosecutions, and there have been prosecutions. I would say maybe there have been about 20 prosecutions in relation to the spate of anti-Semitic incidents that we saw last year, graffiti and firebombing and so on. Demonstrations where terrorist symbols have been displayed and so on. So there have been prosecutions and people have gone to jail, but not for long periods of time. Many of these prosecutions have been in the magistrates' courts. Their jurisdiction doesn't extend to long jail periods. I think the maximum might be 2 years. We have seen prosecutions, we have seen 6 months or 9 months jail, etc. But I'm sure that I'm not unique in saying that it's probably not sending a sufficiently strong message to those who wish to behave in that way, that that is not sufficient. And I think the government now needs to look at the way the law is working and make some changes to ensure that it reflects community standards. I've got a series of recommendations to make to the government. I have been in touch with them. I will be putting up a series of recommendations together with community organisations like the ECAJ. We have been liaising about what is the answer, because at the same time, we have to strike a balance. Okay, we want that kind of behaviour stamped out. But we do live in a democracy, and we've got to understand that we support free speech and rights to assemble, but we need the guardrails. I've spoken about the guardrails, and there are guardrails between free speech and hate speech. Maybe they haven't been sufficiently strong or clear, and maybe the prosecutors have found it difficult to provide the relevant evidence, and we need to look at that. Because one of the things that I have spoken about to the government and to those considering law reform, and that has been looked at overseas, and we're not Robinson Crusoe. We have to look at what's happened overseas because we've seen similar behaviour there. The impact of some of this, the test is not just what they had in their mind, but what they did has had impact on our community. It's made people feel scared, intimidated, unable to carry on with their normal life, and community impact has got to be taken into account now, and is a way to consider the seriousness of the offence. So I think there's room for considerable law reform, and I will be expecting the government to consider it very seriously. Not push it down the road, but we've now seen enough prosecutions, 20 or so, as I say, in the different states and federally, maybe more. The new laws are operating, but perhaps not optimally. We need to refine them. And that's part of what I'm hoping to do. If the government comes out and does endorse the plan, it's a high-level plan, deliberately, because these areas have to be worked on with government and with community. And then the implementation needs to be expanded. And I am working on an implementation plan on the assumption that the government is absolutely committed to this. So I am with you. I'm expecting a very strong answer and response very soon because it's necessary. I'm also expecting strong cooperation, assuming that happens, strong cooperation in its implementation with a renewed sense of urgency.
Well, there's a lot of anger and disbelief that it had to come to this for your report to be given serious consideration. We heard remarks from Alex Rifkin, who said that we had to wait for the Islamophobia envoy to write his report. Then we heard that it needed to go to the Human Rights Commission for a weighing up of both your report and his report, the report from the other envoy into Islamophobia. It has been an inordinate amount of delay that
I haven't cleared them.
I can't can anybody can justify it.
No, I hadn't heard that both reports were being weighed up by the Human Rights Commission. I'm sorry, I don't know where Alex gets that from, but I hadn't heard that.
Well,
So
that was
I
what
can't.
I think these were remarks that Jason Clare made at the back at the time,
No.
the Education
That's not.
Minister.
Yeah, no, that's not true. He made remarks at the time that both reports would be considered together with a report from the Human Rights
Yes.
Commission, where they are doing some work. Or they've done an extensive survey at universities. He thought that it would be very useful information from their survey as to what hatreds and attitudes exist in universities as well. There might be other hatreds, I think was in his mind, as well as, of course, anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. And therefore, he was thinking that one could tackle it in a more holistic fashion. It was not that the Human Rights Commission was weighing up our two reports. They were doing their own piece of work. But I do think that, and yes, it's incredibly unfortunate, tragic, what can one say, that it had to come to this. And as I said on Sunday, we always expected that the hate that was on our streets and in our media, particularly social media, would result in some hateful, ongoing hateful action that went beyond graffiti. But I don't think anyone expected, no one could have expected the horror of Sunday. Where we are, in a sense, horrifically where we are, and I do expect Sunday to have been a huge wake-up call to the government and as it is to the general community. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've had the most enormous outpouring of support and embrace from everyone I have ever met in the community. That shows something about the Australian spirit of standing up for those who've been hurt. And that is now the opportunity for the government to come out very, very soon with a very strong statement of support and actions to follow. I mean, I'm not interested just in a statement, and I'm sure you wouldn't expect me to be, but it's reflective of what I hope will be a renewed energy, engagement, commitment, including resourcing, not to me, but to those who need to carry out some of the initiatives in the report.
You mentioned education as a very important factor that we need to consider, but education is a long-term proposition. You mentioned specifically Holocaust education. We've seen during the period since October the 7th the growth of groups like Teachers and Students for Palestine that have gone into education settings and tried to propagate the message that they have, which is anti-Israel. In your report, Israel is scantly mentioned.
Not mentioned at all. I don't believe it's mentioned at all.
Well, it is mentioned once or twice, but my belief is that this huge spate of anti-Semitism that we've been experiencing has arisen from the antipathy towards Israel that is so widely manifest in so many parts of our society, in academia, in the media. Don't we need a feature of our education to be dealing with the Israel-Palestine conflict, and so people can be properly informed of what the true nature of this conflict is actually about?
That is something to take on board. I mean, I agree with you. What modern anti-Semitism today is reflecting is this horseshoe, the hate on the right, the traditional hatred that has come out of the Holocaust. Well, this was reflected in the Holocaust, if I could say, that same kind of
Yes.
right-wing hatred. And then we have a left-wing hatred, which conflates anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism, does not understand the Jewish people's connection to Israel and the fact that one can support Israel and feel that connection without necessarily supporting all its policies. And then the study of the Middle East as it's manifest in Gaza and with Hezbollah and the Houthis and all those areas of attack that Israel has suffered and had to engage in. That is a secondary issue. It's part of it. And I do not dispute that there will be many, many teachers who want to go into that space. But the important space is to understand that you cannot blame the Australian Jews for just existing, being part of the Australian society, and also being true to their faith and loving Israel. That degree of connection is part of being Jewish. Blaming the Jews for perceived injustices in Israel, right or wrong, that is part of anti-Semitism, and we need to understand that. So it's a multi-layered approach, David. We need to understand, you know, fundamental being a good person, you know, and we have lots of organizations that teach that, Courage to Care and Together for Humanity and others, where all faiths come together and want to teach people to be good people and upstanders. Then Holocaust education is necessary because we must learn from history, okay? Then specific anti-Semitism education is necessary because we have to understand the myths about Jews and we have to understand where their beliefs and connection to Israel comes from. So that's not a module about the wars of the Middle East, but it is the connection of Jews to Israel. And that is the trial that I'm proposing to roll out next year with the support of UNESCO around the states of Australia. But that now needs to be accelerated. That's what we need. Where we go in a fuller understanding and debate about the Middle East is really not the main game. The main game is to understand anti-Semitism, the modern form of anti-Semitism, which has taken the form of anti-Zionism. That's my focus, and that's what I've made extremely clear in the work. And we've produced a module to be rolled out through the public sector to educate them about anti-Semitism. And the first people who have put up their hand are those in the immigration department, those who do visa processing. And you know, I think we have to recognize that progress is being made. It's obviously not enough, but that has taken a bit of time to get that agreed and to produce the resources to educate with the support of the Holocaust Museum Alliance, headed up by the Sydney Jewish Museum in the case of this module. So, you know, that is what we've been working on. So there's been progress. It's not been nothing, but I don't resile from your criticism that it's not enough. And now we need to see it accelerated and strongly supported. And that is my expectation, but we have to wait and see. But I am expecting that soon.
It's been reported that the Prime Minister did not raise your six-month-old plan on combating anti-Semitism at an emergency post-Bondi massacre national cabinet meeting with state leaders, and he was actually forced to bring up this. He just introduced it with a pre-written press release, but it's apparent that he's been focusing more on gun law reform than what is the primary concern here about anti-Semitism. Do you not see it that way?
Well, obviously, I was not at National Cabinet, and I don't know what was discussed. If I might comment in two ways, and then I'm
But you've been having meetings. You've been having meetings with the Prime Minister. Hasn't he been? What's the focus he's been having in those meetings?
I've had one meeting with him since Sunday. Obviously, meetings before Sunday, but one meeting since Sunday. And obviously, the meeting I've had with him is focused on anti-Semitism and my report.
Yes.
Okay. I have not been focused on gun control, and it's not my focus, although if it's an important focus for police, of course we will, as a country, need to look at gun control laws. We need many responses to the events of Sunday, but my focus is on what we're doing to fight anti-Semitism. It's become normalised, as we know, in our country, as in other Western countries, through a whole range of forces, including, I think, foreign forces. And the government did take action in relation to Iran. We have to recognize that when they were faced with that evidence, they did take strong action, an immediate action. But now we need to step up our domestic work in relation to anti-Semitism. If in addition we do gun control, that's fine. But it's by no means the answer to the underlying cause, which was anti-Semitism. So, David, I'm afraid I've got people knocking on my door. We've been going for about half an hour, and I probably need to go. Can we make one last question?
Yeah, I've got one. I really want to bring up the issue of the ABC, which the media hasn't been really discussed very much in this. And there was a woman who was interviewed by the ABC, and I'm going to play that little grab from her, where she actually criticised the ABC when she was speaking directly to them. We've seen that you were interviewed on the ABC by Sarah Ferguson, who really gave you a hard time. I don't believe that I've given you such a hard time as
she
did.
Not at all.
Senator Sarah Henderson's been leading a demand for an urgent Senate inquiry into the ABC, claiming the public broadcaster's editorial division has been allowed to run wild and is no longer fit for purpose as a taxpayer-funded source of trusted news and current affairs. What is going to be your focus on the ABC when you were questioned by Sarah Ferguson about specifics of dealing with the media? You gave no real concrete examples. I've got a heap of examples of where the ABC's systemic anti-Israel bias is plainly evident. What are you going to do to really hone in on this area?
It's an absolute specific matter called out in my plan. I think we do need to look at what has been the media reporting by the ABC and SBS, public broadcasters, public money, and to see if, like we've seen with the BBC, there's been systemic bias. I think that's a major piece of work that needs to be done. And, you know, I'd be happy to receive from you any specific list of examples, because it's certainly a piece of work that I think needs to happen, because they are very influential and they have a mandate to be balanced and fair and representative of all parts of community and to actually build a strong country. So we need to look at that. I agree completely. That doesn't mean that a commission of inquiry is the answer. I think we need systemic work in relation to it, but definitely on my radar.
Well, I hope it's given a lot of attention, because I believe that the media has been driving thoughts into the minds of people, which is what eventually leads to some people going off the deep end into the sorts of terrible actions that we perceive and happened right in front of our very eyes on Sunday.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, we know, as I said, hate words, propaganda, that all leads to action. So we have to tackle it at all levels. So thank you, David. Really
well,
appreciate it.
Let's look forward
Sorry.
To action.
David, if there's no action, we will all be very focused on what should be done. But I believe there'll be action. We have to just respond to this tragedy with renewed determination to take action.
Well, I appreciate having the opportunity to speak to you in this time where you're under an enormous amount of pressure.
No, thank you. Thank you, David. And thank you for being very, very balanced and fair.
I've been speaking with Gillian Siegel, the envoy appointed by the Australian government to combat anti-Semitism. One small correction I'd like to make is that when I referred to Professor Louis Waller, I should have said Professor Ian Waller, who gave a special address yesterday in the Victorian Parliament for the occasion of Hanukkah. Let's listen now to the short interview that was done with a woman on the ABC, to which I referred in my conversation with Gillian Siegel.
How are we feeling? Is this what you wanted? Is this enough now? Will you listen to us? Albanese, Wong, will you listen to us? Will you actually do something? Will you actually... don't have to stand up and say anything, because we don't believe you anyway. And ABC, I've got to say, will you cut out the biased reporting? Mainstream media, we feel we've... Yeah, will you cut it out? Will you actually let us have a voice? Because we feel that part of the reason that the Jewish people have experienced such a massive change in Australia towards us. I mean, I'm Aussie, you know, but, and I'm not a religious Jewish girl, but a woman, but since October the 7th, since all the hatred that's been thrown at us, I started to wear my Magen and David, because I'm Jewish, and if you have something to say, you can say it to me. And ABC, please stop with the biased reporting.
Victoria, we are so sorry for what you are going through and what you have been through, and we really hope that your father recovers. I know all of us here, we are horrified by what has been going on. So thank you for joining us and sharing your story, Victoria.
Thank you very much. Well, we are going to stay across, obviously, what is happening here at Bondi Beach.
On ABC Radio National this morning, Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong was interviewed by ABC presenter Mel Clark. The questions posed by the ABC presenter were sensible and reasonable, but Wong's responses were dreadfully hollow and indirect. You just need to listen to her weasel words to realise how appalling she is and how the government that she represents is failing miserably.
Authorities are now investigating the training and connections the Bondi gunman may have had both in Australia and overseas. Police have confirmed the father and son alleged killers travelled to the Philippines weeks before they killed 15 people at a Jewish community event on Sunday. A senior counter-terrorism official has told the ABC that the pair received military-style training on a southern island known for hosting terrorist groups. Penny Wong is the Minister for Foreign Affairs.
Good morning, Mel. Good to be with you.
With the benefit of hindsight, do you think this attack could have been prevented?
Well, look, the country is in shock and the country is in pain and the country is grieving, especially Jewish Australians. At the same time that we have felt so much pain, we've also seen the best of Australia, and we know we're stronger and all safer when we stand together, and that's what we must now do, to come together, to ensure we act with resolve, to protect all Australians and to protect in particular our Jewish community, and to confront at all levels, government, community, media, anti-Semitism.
I do want to come to some of those broader issues, but for specifically at looking at some of the information we now know about these two men. We know they travelled to a known terrorism hotspot in the southern Philippines and took part in a training camp. Is that the sort of activity by Australian citizens, something that Australian authorities or our intelligence partners should be able to detect?
Well, I know it has been confirmed that the attackers travelled to the Philippines prior to this attack. Obviously, as the New South Wales Police have said, their visit and why they were there, where they went and so on is part of the active investigation. So some of the matters that you're referring to are not matters that I can comment on at this point in the investigation, Mel.
Is there any further update then that you can give us following your conversation with your Philippines counterpart yesterday?
Well, look, one of the things I've been doing has been to engage with my foreign counterparts, and we're grateful for their condolences and solidarity. And one of the counterparts I engaged with was Foreign Secretary Lazaro. We appreciate her condolences. You probably understand I can't go into all details of our discussion, but I can say that we, Australia and the Philippines, are long-standing partners on regional security and on related matters, and that will continue.
I appreciate there are limits to what you can say at this point, but we have heard from the FBI Director Kash Patel saying that the US is providing requested intelligence to Australia. We know that the US has a significant presence in the southern part of the Philippines. Would it be fair to presume that the US is offering assistance or coordination where required?
What I can say to Australians is our law enforcement and intelligence agencies are engaging with all relevant foreign counterparts in order to make sure we have the fullest investigation possible.
Minister, has the government done enough over the last 2 years to combat anti-Semitism in Australia?
Look, we have taken many actions, including criminalising hate speech. But what I would say to you is that we all understand we need to do more. We will dedicate every resource required to making sure Jewish Australians are safe and protected. But as Gillian Segal has said publicly, the anti-Semitism envoy, whom I spoke with on Sunday night, if we are to confront anti-Semitism fully, then the government needs to act, and so do does all of the community. And we need to draw inspiration from, I think, firstly, the principle that we are stronger and more united when we are united, And also from the example of Ahmed El Ahmed, you know, a Muslim Australian migrant who ran towards danger to save his fellow Australians. And that is the spirit all of us must bring to this.
Gillian Segal said yesterday that there should be a formal statement from the government about the implementation of her recommendations in her report that your government received in July. Likewise, your colleague Josh Burns told the ABC yesterday that he wants to see a timeline and an agenda around dealing with those matters. Will the government give a formal response and a commitment to all of the recommendations in that report?
I think the Prime Minister made clear yesterday he had met with Ms. Segal about her report and what she has said publicly, and certainly that reflects her discussions with me, is that she recognises that whilst we have acted on and will continue to act on the implementation of the plan, that there is more to do. And we will work with her and all governments through National Cabinet to make sure we confront anti-Semitism. But as I said, it's something all of us must do. So government has our responsibility, and we accept that. But we all need to act.
So will there be a formal written response to the report?
Well, look, I'll leave that for the Prime Minister to discuss with Ms. Segal. I'm sure those discussions yesterday went to what the next steps are. But people should be in no doubt about our resolve, as the Prime Minister said on Sunday night. We are determined to eradicate anti-Semitism in our country, and we are determined to work to bring Australians together. I keep saying this, but it is true. We are stronger when we are more united. And there is much in our community that we can look to, you know, that gives us hope and inspiration, whether it's Ahmed El Ahmed or those who ran towards danger, or those who are rolling up their sleeves to donate blood, or the first responders who responded, some of whom were injured.
Yesterday, the former Prime Minister, John Howard, made some personal criticisms against you and the Prime Minister. He said the decision to recognise a Palestinian state was premature and needlessly provocative, and he questioned why you didn't visit areas of Israel most directly affected by Hamas's assault. What's your response to the former Prime Minister's criticisms?
Look, this is a time where we are grieving, and I offer my condolences to the Jewish Australians who have lost loved ones, to those. I offer my support to those who are recovering in hospital, and I'm not going to get into a political debate.
Is there anything you would do differently in hindsight over the last 2 years?
Look, I think people would have seen consistently the government, the Prime Minister, all ministers, including I, being very clear about the unacceptable anti-Semitism in our society. I've made that public statement many times. But as I said to you at the outset of this interview, we all have to do more, and I accept that.
Foreign Minister Penny Wong, thank you very much for joining me on Radio National Breakfast this morning.
Good to speak with you, Mel.
That's the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Penny Wong, there.
I have to say that I've had an extraordinary number of messages of sympathy from so many people whom I've interviewed over time. One of those came from Sarah Brown, who is the director of the American Jewish Committee office in San Diego. Sarah Brown is a genocide scholar who has been a member of the International Association for Genocide Scholars for more than 10 years and was on its advisory board for 2 4-year terms. Let's listen to our discussion about the significance of the Bondi Massacre from her perspective.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right because I'm not directly affected. There are some people who are injured that I know of, and if you see my bulletin I put out today for my show, the picture is of one of those very people who is an international lawyer, Arsen Ostrovsky, an Australian who went to Israel, as back in Australia now. I don't have direct contact with him, but I think his picture is an absolutely epic representation of what happened on Sunday.
It's awful.
There's been a lot of words that have been thrown around here. Did you have a chance to listen to our foreign minister's remarks?
So I heard about the first 5 to 6 minutes of it. And so I heard them saying, yes, we've done what we can to criminalize hate speech, but more could be done. It sounds like word soup, if I'm being, but here, I mean, I'm happy to comment on it if you want to.
Well, I find that, she didn't answer the first question about whether they could have done something to stop this terrible massacre that took place. I mean, there's a lot of antipathy towards her and to the Prime Minister. I'm going to have somebody else who's here who's put an exhibition on at a local gallery after October the 7th. She encourages performance artists and is a sculptor herself. That's Nina Sanadze. There's an incredible amount of anger, and I can see that the government is forced, obviously, to be making remarks like, we've got to do more. How could they not be saying that? But they've had a recommendation from the anti-Semitism envoy, Gillian Siegler, who I'm hoping to speak to. If I'm not speaking to her, I'll be speaking with her chief of staff, because she may be called into another government meeting, and I'm very sceptical of what these government meetings are achieving. They're trying to somehow wind their way through this morass and find a way to give the impression that they're actually taking proper action that is going to remediate the situation we're in. From a perspective of gun control, and this is something, of course, which crops up every time in the US. You're totally familiar with this. This is now seen to be a diversion from the real central focus that's needed here on anti-Semitism.
I understand folks who are concerned about gun control. I get that. I respect that. I understand that Australia made historic reforms after a horrific mass shooting in the 90s. But I do wish that the focus could be on addressing this scourge of anti-Semitism here and now. Yes, if you feel the need to implement those reforms, fine. But first things first, you need to address the poison, the virus that is infecting your society, in my opinion.
So when we spoke about this report that was put out by genocide scholars. And I would put the proposition that the fact that media and other organizations that around the traps have been pushing out a message that Israel has been committing genocide in Gaza, and no doubt that is getting into the minds of many people, and could be seen to be a driving force behind actions that we just saw, like the one at Bondi. No doubt, I think you might agree with the fact that this allowance of this continual accusation of which amounts to a blood libel against what Israel has been trying to achieve is something that there should have been more pushback against.
I agree with you. I similarly am concerned that misinformation and disinformation about the Israel-Hamas war and Israel's actions in the context of the Israel-Hamas war have become fuel for anti-Jewish sentiments, Jew hatred, anti-Semitism around the globe. And I also, frustrates me to say this, we were not shocked, unfortunately, by the horrific events that just took place at Bondi Beach. We were not shocked. We were devastated, but we were not shocked because our CEO, Ted Deutsch, had traveled to Australia to stand in solidarity with the Jewish community there back in September and had numerous conversations saying, you need to address the hate rhetoric that is going unchecked all over Australia right now and the anti-Semitism that is going unchecked all over Australia right now. And unfortunately, what we're seeing, you know, meaningful action against anti-Semitism must be taken, or we see the disastrous, violent results. Here we are today. It's awful. And I think that unfortunately, the misinformation, the disinformation, the normalization of this hyper focus on Israel in the context of the Israel-Hamas war, that has led to a lot of folks who are looking at this content. They're looking at international organizations issuing statements that are so deeply biased and problematic, and it is justifying their hatred and eventual turn to violence and radicalization.
In the United States, do you feel that your organization is getting enough support from the authorities, from government, which differs from what we are seeing here in Australia?
It hurts my heart to say it because I wish it were better for Australian Jews, for our brothers and sisters in Australia. But I do feel that we do have a core base of support. So I can speak to some of what transpired on Sunday for me here in San Diego. That morning was devastating and awful, but I also want to point out that almost immediately we heard from our local elected officials and our law enforcement officers and key figures who reached out to share their grief, to share their solidarity, and to also tell us what steps they were taking to ensure that Jewish institutions across the community were safe and secure and would be able to celebrate the first night of Hanukkah, knowing that they were every measure was being taken to ensure they could gather and gather safely. And so I was very grateful for that. At the same time, we reached out to our members of Congress, so our five local U.S. representatives and our two senators, to tell them that we were horrified by what had happened and we need assurances that at the federal level, they are going to continue to take every step possible to ensure that we don't get into a situation like this here in the United States. Right now, we're waiting for our special envoy on anti-Semitism to be confirmed. And so that's something that we ask. But we also ask community members, elected officials, and law enforcement to stand with the Australian Jewish people and to light a candle for Australia. And so I want to point out, too, that while, yes, words are not enough, those expressions of solidarity do create a groundswell, and they do signal to those who would capitalize on anti-Israel rhetoric and Jew hatred to normalize expressions like globalize the Intifada and other horrific hate speech. I think that they saw that and they realized this was not a time to push. They did not have a platform right now. It is different here, and I wish it were better for our brothers and sisters in Australia.
So your previous envoy, Deborah Lipstadt, has stepped down. That's why there's a vacancy at the moment, which hasn't been filled.
Correct. We are, in fact, waiting for that position to be filled. We're hopeful that that will be expedited, but we understand that that's with our federal government right now. We are also very big fans of Deborah Lipstadt here in across the United States in the Jewish community. I'm proud to say that she's actually coming to speak to our San Diego community as a keynote speaker of one of my organization's events that we're going to be hosting on April 19th of 2026. And so, David, I want to welcome you, invite you. If you want to come hop across the pond, you are more than welcome to join and hear from her directly.
Yeah, the pond is a little bit wider than ponds I'm normally able to hop across.
Still, you are welcome.
In your neighbour, Canada, they also have had an envoy to combat anti-Semitism, Deborah Lyons, who was a former ambassador to Israel. That position hasn't been filled since July after she stepped down.
Yeah, I know more about what's happening here in the U.S., but we have watched events transpire in Canada with growing concern. The envoy isn't, it's not a panacea. It's
exactly.
Not a silver bullet. It doesn't fix everything. But I do think it is a strong signal from the highest echelons of government that they are taking this seriously, that they want to take proactive steps to ensure that anti-Semitism is on its way down and is not allowed to continue to rise unchecked. And unfortunately, I think where there is that lag, where there are the dragging feet, where they're hesitating to fill a position, that to me is a worrisome indicator.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for speaking to me on the Israel Connection and giving your views from the other side of the world as to what has transpired horribly here in Australia just a few days ago.
Yeah. Listen, thank you for having me. We are We are mourning with you. We are devastated with you. We stand with you right now for Jews all over Australia, and especially those who are hospitalized right now and recovering from the attacks in Bondi Beach. A refuah shalema to them. This has been horrific, but we will not, and this is something I feel very strongly about, we will not let them dim the light of Hanukkah. And so if anything, like, we're all going to light candles and make that light shine even brighter, because right now this is our best form of spiritual resistance.
Well, we really appreciate getting the empathy and sympathy from people like yourself. I've had other people that I've spoken to on my program that have sent me messages asking if I'm okay. When I'm in Melbourne, this all took place in Sydney remotely from where I am. It could happen. It could have happened in Melbourne. It could happen anywhere, as we know. People here are very afraid, and things need to change without any doubt whatsoever.
Yeah. You know, David, I was thinking about it. Here in San Diego County, we have a study from 2022, so the numbers might be a little different, but we have about 100,000 Jews in San Diego County alone. And my understanding is it's maybe around 120,000 or so across Australia.
Well, similar number.
Similar number. And we're so tight-knit here. And even though you're spread across this massive, wonderful continent, wonderful country, I just imagine it's a small community. It's a tight-knit community. And also we are part of a global Jewish family. And so one of us is hurting. All of us feel it.
That's absolutely the feeling. Thank you. Oh.
Yeah. Thank you so much, David. I hope you stay well.
I've been speaking with Sarah Brown, the director of the American Jewish Committee Office in San Diego. Nina Sanadze is an amazing artist, a Jewish sculptor who lives in Melbourne and runs the Goldstone Gallery in the suburb of Collingwood. She has been running a unique exhibition in her gallery in commemoration of October the 7th. Following the Bondi massacre, Nina found it necessary to express how she was feeling following more than 2 years of anti-Semitic hate that has been festering in this country of Australia. One poignant aspect of the horrific Bondi terror attack is a 10-year-old girl named Matilda, who has been identified as one of the victims of Sunday's terror attack at Sydney's Bondi Beach. She had been named Matilda by her Ukrainian parents as a way of acknowledging their special link to this country of ours. As you hear Nina talking in the background, you'll be listening to an orchestra playing a version of Waltzing Matilda, which is in tribute to this 10-year-old girl who passed away so tragically at Bondi on Sunday. You're about to hear the words that Nina has put together to express her intense feelings about what we have been experiencing because of anti-Semitism and the abject failure of our government to properly address it.
A 12-year-old girl, Matilda, was just murdered on Bondi Beach in Sydney 2025. Her Jewish family survived the Holocaust by bullets in Ukraine in 1942, but not this. Most of my family perished in Holocaust by bullets too. Matilda's parents said, "We came here from Ukraine, and we named her Matilda because she was our firstborn in Australia. We thought Matilda was the most Australian name that could exist. So just remember her name. So I ask you, what will it take? Go to Canberra, go to Parliament House, go to the ABC, demand the Prime Minister Albanese resign now. Stop business as usual. Bring your families, stand up and refuse silence. This government has catastrophically failed to protect Jewish Australians. We warned, we asked, we begged, we shouted. Every warning was ignored. Antisemitism was normalized on television, in universities, in the arts, in politics, in NGOs, and excused, funded, enabled by those in power. What did you think would happen next? This is no longer incompetence or cowardice. It is now criminal. This cynical anti-Semitic government has blood on its hands. I do not care which political party Prime Minister is part of, whether it's left or right. He failed to do his fundamental job to keep the community safe, and he knew too well this massacre was going to happen. It is a systematic and deliberate purging of Jews from all corners of society by all means necessary, as they promised us for 2 years and shouted this on the streets openly, and nothing was done about it. Do not dare offering more money for security that turns Jewish kindergartens, synagogues and cultural spaces into armed compounds behind bulletproof glass. We will not accept Jewish children growing up behind barricades. If this is the future you tolerate, leave it to yourselves, not us. We demand real safety for Jews in this country. We demand real accountability. We demand mandatory re-education. We demand the removal of anti-Semites from positions of power everywhere. We demand urgent sweeping review of media, universities, art institutions, political parties, NGOs. This country is at breaking point. Confront anti-Semitism now, clearly, forcefully, without excuses, or this is the beginning of the end. Remember this date, December 14th. Remember Matilda's name. Act now. It's enough. Albanese must resign immediately. And that should be just the first step in sweeping changes that are absolutely urgent. Thank you. I'm Nina Sanadze, Goldstone Gallery Director.
Before I go, I'd like to wish all my listeners Chag Sameach for Hanukkah. And I'd like to point out that our Prime Minister Albanese sent out his pro forma Hanukkah greetings just prior to Hanukkah. And this is always expected from political leaders. It came out with the sorts of words one normally expects, but the post on social media was prefaced with Chag Sameach Pesach, which is illustrative of how far off our Prime Minister is in appreciating what our Jewish community is and what it represents. This very embarrassing slip-up was picked up by somebody just before it was corrected on social media. Small flame shows to stay alive. Not many, not loud, not armed, just faith strong enough to survive. A temple broken, hope running thin, one drop of oil, one honest try. And when the night should have ended the light refused to die. Tonight again the world feels torn, names turned into silence and pain. But Hanukkah never looks away, it teaches us where to light the flame. My Osur Yeshuati, my rock, my shelter strong. Lechana El Eshaveach, even in sorrow we sing this song. This is the light that carried us then, this is the light that carries us now. As long as we remember their names, the darkness does not win somehow. The candles burn with weight, each flame a prayer, each glow a name. Across the ocean, hearts were broken, innocent lives lost to hate. Hanukkah doesn't deny the grief, it walks straight through the pain. Not with anger, not with fear, but with love. Pain from loss to living memory.
against many, faith against fear. The miracle wasn't only oil, it was choosing to stay.
You've been listening to the first part of this week's offering from the Israel Connection. Stay tuned, there is another episode of this program to follow. In the second hour of the Israel Connection today, you'll hear some key speeches that have been delivered in the aftermath of the Bondi terror attack. First up, let's listen to an amazing speech that former Treasurer Josh Frydenberg delivered to the crowd gathered at the vigil site in Bondi.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. I'm here to pay my respects to the souls of 15 innocent people who have lost their life in the deadliest terrorist attack in Australia's history, in the greatest loss of Jewish life since October the 7th, anywhere around the world outside the state of Israel. Rabbis, Holocaust survivors, and the beautiful 10-year-old Matilda. Her parents said they gave her that name because it was the most Australian name they knew. What a tragedy. This massacre at Bondi is the greatest stain on this nation, has brought the greatest shame to our nation. I'm here to mourn, but I'm also here to warn. Unless our governments, federal and state, take urgent, unprecedented and strong action, as night follows day, we will be back grieving the loss of innocent life in another terrorist attack in our country. This was all too predictable. Ever since those hours after Hamas's horrific attack on October the 7th, we saw the heinous scenes on the steps of another national icon, the Sydney Opera House, with people celebrating that death and destruction. Who was apprehended that day? None of those who hate Australia and hate Jews, but a simple Jewish man holding in solidarity the Israeli flag. And since that day, we have seen the doxing of Jewish creatives, the cancelling of Jewish artists, the boycotting of Jewish businesses, the graffitiing of our schools, the harassment, the intimidation of Jewish students and staff on our university campuses, and of course, the firebombing of our synagogues and daycare centres, and daily protests of hate in this, the lucky country, which is lucky no more. And for 2.5 years, as the Australian Jewish community and others have raised the alarm bells, they were told by people who should know better that this was not as significant as they had said. We were told, they didn't say gas the Jews on the steps of the Opera House, they simply said, where are the Jews? We've got a university vice chancellor at the ANU, when one of her students went out publicly and supported a listed terrorist organisation, Hamas, we were told, I don't agree with what she has said, but it's her right under academic freedom to say it. And then we have the nurses in Bankstown, calling for the death of Israelis, and we are told it's just a joke. Or when a caravan has a deadly message against Jews, we're told it's just a hoax. Well, the greatest massacre in Australia's history is no hoax. It's no joke. It's a horrible, evil crime. So make no mistake, I am here, we are here, to fight for the soul of Australia and to fight for the survival of the Australian Jewish community that has been here since the arrival of the First Fleet. Just over 100,000 strong, it has produced Australia's greatest citizen soldier, Sir John Monash, who would be turning in his grave right now. Our first Australian-born Governor-General, Sir Isaac Isaacs, and the man who brought a touch of healing to our country, Sir Zelman Cowan. And Olympic gold medalist Jessica Fox, and chief scientists and our greatest philanthropists, like Frank Lowy and industrialists. This is what the Jewish community has contributed in 125 years or more, and this is how our government repays us. We, as a Jewish community, have been abandoned and left alone by our governments. Our governments have failed every Australian when it comes to fighting hate and anti-Semitism. Our Prime Minister, our government, has allowed Australia to be radicalised on his watch. It's time for him to accept personal responsibility for the death of 15 innocent people, including a 10-year-old child. It's time our Prime Minister accepted accountability for what has happened here. And it's time our leaders stood up and led at last and finally. This is a time for accountability and action. So, Prime Minister, I am going to give you some ideas about what you need to do.
Yes.
Firstly, Prime Minister, ban the hate preachers. On October the 8th, in Lakemba, you had Islamic preachers say that October the 7th was an act of courage and pride. When the Muslim community hears that message for the last 2.5 years, is this any surprise? The shooter here who did this was linked to a factory of hate in Bankstown. How can that factory of hate be allowed to open its doors for one day more? I say no, I say never. Yep. Second, Prime Minister, ban these extremist organisations that have been allowed to flourish on your watch in our country when you have been Prime Minister.
That was Josh Frydenberg earlier. He is still speaking. Let's listen in.
So the Prime Minister can't tell us how hard it is anymore. because no one will believe him. And no one is believing him. At the end of the day, he must produce change. He must produce action. And he must ensure that Australia is safer at our universities, in our art sectors, on our streets, in our homes, in our places of worship. This is not hard, Prime Minister. There is a red line between good and evil. We need you at last to stand on the side of good, not evil. Well, if you look in the United States, they are now checking much more closely where people are coming from and also the records of what these people have said. We have got people in Australia today, Prime Minister, go and find them out, who have celebrated this attack on Sunday, online. I've seen their messages. What, Prime Minister, are you going to do about them? Why do they have a right to be in Australia with you and me? They don't love Australia, they hate Australia. The people who carried out these attacks don't love Australia, they hate Australia. I heard one of the leading journalists from the ABC say this has nothing to do with religion. Well, you know what that is? That's propaganda. That's not fact. We've heard from the agencies that there was an ISIS flag in the car. And we heard that these people have been training with Islamic extremists. We cannot accept people coming to this country. We cannot accept people staying in this country who do not subscribe to Australian values. This is a matter of self-defence. This is our national interest. This is a matter not just of self-defence, this is a matter of common sense, Prime Minister.
Yeah. Would you be calling for the Trump administration to introduce those new laws, particularly about social media screening? Is that something you're calling for?
I'm calling for the Prime Minister not to give us any more excuses. I'm calling for our Prime Minister to take action so this never happens again. I'm calling for our Prime Minister to ensure, to the best of our knowledge, whatever means he needs to use to screen the people coming here, to ensure that people who are staying here are not engaged in incitement and in violence and in hatred. The head of ASIO, the person who is charged with the security and intelligence services for Australia, he said months ago that rising anti-Semitism was his agency's number one priority and concern. He also said that words lead to violence. So if people are going online and people are not accepting the existence of a Jewish community, if people are calling Zionists, of which Peter Cosgrove is, John Howard is, Nova Peris is, Julia Gillard is, if they're Pauline Hanson, it doesn't matter. They believe in the state of Israel. If people are coming to this country and they are wanting to prosecute the wars from thousands of miles away here in Australia, and if they're wanting to wave Palestinian flags without an Australian flag, I say no more. Because I'm on Australia's side.
Major legislative change would require bipartisan support from both sides of the aisle, similar to after Port Arthur?
So this is a really important point. I don't care what your religion is. I don't care what your political allegiance is. I don't care if you're Calathumpian, for goodness sake. All I care about is that you have a moral compass, that you are morally upright, that you believe in Australian values, that you believe in democracy, that you support equal rights for men and women. They are the people that our diggers, that our Anzacs fought for when they fought fascism. They are the people that I fought for when I was in the parliament. And they are the people that tragically innocent lives have been lost for. Because we have in our country people who have been emboldened who want to hate and want to harm. And they have to be stopped at all costs.
Are you saying that our security services failed Australians?
Clearly.
Yep.
I mean, if you ask me that question, I don't know what's in your head.
Yeah.
15 innocent people have lost their lives here and many more are fighting for their lives in hospital. Three police... ...unity at a time of heightened concern. People trained in the terrorist camps of the Philippines. They bought licensed guns. And you are asking me, has there been a failure of security? The people who say this has nothing to do with Islam, the people who say this has nothing to do with a security failure, the people who say this has nothing to do with the government, they are propagandists. And they are missing what's right in front of their eyes.
Mr. Frydenberg, one of two of these shooters was born in Australia, grew up in Australia, so obviously that wouldn't be solved by migration rules tightening. He also has been on ASIO's watch list since 2019, so that's across multiple governments of multiple parties. Is there not shared blame across the board for this not being picked up sooner?
So here's the thing. That person you refer to was radicalised in Australia. Radicalised in Australia. That's the point of what I have been saying. We have to stop the radicalisation. And Prime Minister, that's not easy. And of course you'll get bipartisan support. That is easy. What's hard is for you to take those in your own party who are turning the other way when this happens. What is hard is to tell some home truths to the radical communities in Australia, to go down to the mosques and shut those preachers down. That's what's happened in Australia. Now you ask me about whether the blame can be sheeted across the partisan or political divide. We lost government in 2022. We listed Hamas and Hezbollah on the terrorist watches. In October 2023, Hamas committed their attacks. When the blood wasn't even dry, when Israel hadn't even responded, Prime Minister, your Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, called for Israel's restraint. When an Australian Galit Carbone was gunned to death by Hamas in Israel, the Foreign Minister visited Israel, and the Foreign Minister didn't even dare put in her schedule a visit to pay her respects to the death of a fellow Australian. And when the events at the Opera House happened, and when the doxing happened, and when the boycotts happened, and when the protests happened on a daily basis, and the riot happened in Caulfield, and the synagogues were burned, not enough was done. And that occurred on the Prime Minister's watch. We need leaders who don't just want the job, but are prepared to do the job.
Free speech,
and if we don't, and if we don't have that leadership, this is the result.
Josh, many of the Jewish community were calling for this leadership for 2 years. The Prime Minister refused to give it repeatedly. As you said, ignored Julian Siegel's report. There is now 17 dead. Shouldn't he resign? Why should he keep the job when people are now dead?
Well, the Prime Minister must look into the mirror and ask himself a very serious question. What is his first and fundamental duty? And that is to protect the safety and the security of his citizens, of our citizens. And he has failed. And this was not a spontaneous individual event isolated event. It's very different to Port Arthur. Port Arthur was a tragedy. But this has been building in front of our very eyes for 2.5 years. And today, our national security chiefs, Nick Warner, Duncan Lewis, Dennis Richardson, they've held pretty much every title, every role in Australia's national security and intelligence infrastructure. And they have said more needs to be done, and it's not about guns per se, it's about radical ideology. And so, Prime Minister, until you stand here in front of these cameras and say that you and your government, hand on heart, accept personal responsibility for what has taken place, until you, Prime Minister, stand here on this spot and accept accountability for the failure of your government, then everything after that will mean nothing to the people who are here today.
Should the Prime Minister resign?
I'll leave others to make those calls. What I've said to the Prime Minister, bear in mind I've sat around the National Security Committee of Cabinet. I've sat with the professionals from our intelligence, from our defence, from our foreign affairs agencies and our law enforcement agencies. Give them the tools to do what they need to do to keep us safe. But Prime Minister, use your position, use your authority, use your pulpit to tell Australians where the red lines are and what will no longer be accepted here in Australia. When I interviewed John Howard for my documentary on anti-Semitism, I asked him what would have he done if he was Prime Minister at the time of October the 7th. And he said his first call would have been to Kim Beazley as the Leader of the Opposition. And it would have been to say, Kim, stand with me in the Prime Ministerial Courtyard and let's tell Australians where the red lines are. And if they cross those red lines, then there will be consequences.
Yep.
And that has not happened. So what the Prime Minister must do now, he must call a Royal Commission, he must ban the preachers, he must ban the protests, he must prosecute the incitement, he must ban Hizbut al-Tahrir and other right-wing or left-wing organisations that are spewing this hate that are banned in other parts of the world. The Prime Minister must invest in education, put in place much more rigorous immigration checks, including for those who are here, and deport those who are breaching our values and breaching our laws. He needs to respond. He needs to respond to Gillian Segal's report, and he needs to take action straight away before we are here for another terrorist attack.
Who hasn't had a question?
Okay.
The Sydney Harbour Bridge March was challenged in court by the New South Wales Police, and the court ruled in favour of the march itself. So there's clearly a legal precedent. So what could the Prime Minister do any differently to what's already gone through the New South Wales courts in regards to the marches going ahead?
Well, you just said it yourself, that the state government didn't want the march to go ahead, okay? So you're the state government. You're asking a lot of questions today that you should be able to provide your own answers to. The state government makes the laws. And if they need federal laws, they have something called the National Cabinet, or COAG. So it's up to Premier Minns. This is what's happened in Premier Minns' New South Wales. The march across the Harbour Bridge happened in Premier Minns' New South Wales. What happened outside the Opera House happened in Premier Minns' New South Wales. He, as a leader, must push through the laws to not allow these protests.
Yeah. So to challenge the ruling to the court?
The courts follow the law. And so you make the law that the courts will follow. And if there are holes in the law, you fill them. That is simple. That is what is needed. That is what should have been done.
Exactly. What is your message to those 100,000 Australians who marched across the bridge? What would you tell them?
Well, if you want to support Palestinian statehood, that's fine. If you want to criticise the Israeli government on the prosecution of the war, that's fine. But what we saw on that bridge was not that. We saw death to the IDF. We saw Hamas, Hezbollah and ISIS flags. We saw members of Albanese's own government standing below an image of the Ayatollah of Iran, whose ambassador has been linked to terrorist attacks here in Australia. So these were not peaceful marches. This is my point. These were not peaceful marches. These were incubators of hate. You've got the head of the Palestinian Network here in Australia who goes on British TV who can't even say that Hamas is a terrorist organisation that committed a terrorist attack. And these people are here in Australia. These people have been pictured with Penny Wong. Prime Minister, can't you see what's in front of your eyes? Australia has been radicalised in an unprecedented way in the last 2.5 years on your watch. And you are now responsible for fixing it. And you must fix it. Otherwise, there will be another attack. And we wouldn't have learnt the lessons that are here for everyone to see.
And what would have happened if the Prime Minister attended the funeral for the rabbi held half an hour ago a few blocks from here? He did not show up.
Well, I can't speak for that, Aaron, but what I can say to you is that when the Premier of Melbourne, Victoria, turned up at a synagogue memorial service, she was booed. Now, I am not saying people should do that, but what I'm saying is that it's reflective of deep anger here. When each of us got news, as I did on Sunday night, celebrating a bar mitzvah of a young Jewish man coming of age, when I got news that there was a terrorist attack on our national icon, Bondi Beach, we were all in shock. We were all then in sorrow. And we're all in sadness. But now this has turned to red hot anger. Yeah. Because everyone can see what could have been done, which was not done to prevent this. And my message is to every Australian, the events of the last 2.5 years in our country have made you less safe. They have undermined Australian values. They have torn to shreds our social fabric. You don't have to take my word for it as a Jewish Australian or an Australian Jew. Just take the words of one of our most distinguished Australians, Sir Peter Cosgrove, a person who was the Governor General of Australia, the head of our Defence Force, who said what has happened in Australia in the last 2.5 years would make Hitler proud. He said that. It's a message to every Australian that those in authority, those with the power to make change, have not made those changes, but they've allowed our country to be radicalised, and as a result, our country is so much less safe.
Mr. Feinberg, amongst the people injured on Sunday are 2 police officers. We've just had confirmation that one of them has lost one of his eyes. Well, what's your response to those injured police officers?
Well, firstly, I want to thank those police officers that were on the scene straight away. I want to thank the police officers who go to work every day to put their lives on the line to protect their fellow Australians. And my heart goes out to the family of those police officers that have been injured. And this is the consequence of our governments, of our leaders, of the hate preachers, of everyone who has had a hand in what has taken place. And I also want to acknowledge the heroism of those people who on the day tried to stop the shooters. those husband and wife who lost their life, and a Muslim man, Ahmed, I think his name, who tackled so bravely in front of the world that attacker. He deserves our thanks. Because he, yes. And he reminds us he was a Muslim attacking a Muslim to protect Jews. And you go to Israel and you see side by side on their Supreme Court, in their defence forces, in across every aspect of society, Jew and Muslim living side by side. But my point today is it's bigger than this. There is radical Islam, and it has gained more than a foothold in Australia. It's pervasive. It's being preached. It's being taught. It's being practiced. And our governments and our law enforcement and our intelligence agencies and our leaders need to do much, much more.
Mr. Feinberg, speaking on heroism, how do you feel about seeing not just around the locals here, but across the state and Australia, community members, Australians stepping up to help, you know, donating blood? We've had volunteers down here giving out water bottles and making sure people are fed for those who come here and give, you know, respect to those we've lost. What do you have to say to those?
I think something has changed in Australia. I think Australia will never be the same again. And I think this will be a dark cloud of our country for the rest of time. But I also think for millions and millions and millions of well-meaning, decent, big-hearted Australians, they know this is not right. They know what has happened here is the epitome of evil. They know this has to be eradicated in our country. And they know that the people who are preaching this hate, who are practicing this hate, who are teaching this hate, have no place in our country. And we don't want more people like that coming here. And so my message to them is a message of thank you, but it's also a message that the Holocaust survivors, who I interviewed in the documentary, shared with me. And that is, do not be a bystander. The standard you walk past is the standard you accept. And don't think you are immune from this attack on a Hanukkah festival on the beaches of Bondi, because you are not. And the police officers, who are not Jewish, are the victims too. There's an amazing man now long past. He was a Lutheran pastor. His name was Martin Niemöller. Martin Niemöller was protesting against the Nazis. He was imprisoned and he was tortured and his life was endangered by the Nazis. And after the war, which he survived, he wrote a poem. And in this poem he said, "First they came for the communists, but I did not speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, but I did not speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and I did not speak up because I wasn't a Jew. And then they came for me and there was no one left to speak up for me." This is the message from this massacre at Bondi. First, they come for the Saturday people. Then they come for the Sunday people. And unless you accept this extreme, violent form of Islamist ideology, you are an infidel. And you are a target. So, Prime Minister, there's more than 27 million targets out there for these extremists. It's up to you to make us all more safe.
Yes. Well done, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you.
At the special ceremony at Bondi last night, in recognition of the day that had been declared a day of reflection following the Bondi terror attack, the President of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies, David Ossip, spoke very eloquently.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is David Ossip, and I'm President of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies, the roof body of the New South Wales Jewish community. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank each of you for being here tonight in solidarity with the New South Wales Jewish community on this, the eighth night of Hanukkah, this special night of unity and commemoration. I acknowledge the presence here tonight of Their Excellencies, Governor General Sam Mostyn and Governor of New South Wales, Margaret Beasley. The Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese. Federal Opposition Leader, Susan Lee. New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns. Who has not missed a funeral, a synagogue service, or an opportunity to be with the Jewish community this week? Thank you, Chris, for your leadership. I acknowledge the Leader of the Opposition in New South Wales, a hero, Kelly Sloan. Now, just wait for a moment. Just wait. I understand Kelly will tell her story a bit later, but I want everyone to know that last week, Kelly made the choice in the midst of the attack to go down to Bondi Beach, to go to where the incident was taking place, and she provided assistance to those who were injured and gave shelter to those who needed it. I am a personal witness to the choice she made. That is bravery. That is courage. Thank you, Kelly. I also welcome all of the parliamentarians who have joined us tonight, including ministers and shadow ministers, mayors, councillors, leaders of faith communities, first responders, including Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon, surf club presidents, sporting teams, representatives of the Bondi. Thank you. Representatives of the Bondi and Eastern Suburbs community, senior bureaucrats, including some who have made tonight possible, other distinguished guests, rabbis, Jewish communal leaders, ladies and gentlemen. Friends, present here this evening are also many immediate family members and friends of those who were so cruelly murdered at this very place exactly a week ago. Your courage and your resilience inspire us, and we are sending our love and our prayers to you at this time. I want you to know on behalf of everyone who is here tonight that we are going to be with you today and every day going forward. And we know that the memory of your loved ones, the pure souls who were murdered so mercilessly last week, will be a blessing. To those who were injured, some of whom are here in the audience tonight, and many others who are watching online, we are praying for you and for your complete and swift recovery. This includes figures like Geffen Bitton and Ahmed Al Ahmed. Whose unbelievable bravery saved so many lives last week. Friends, I spent time with Ahmed this morning, and his father is here with us tonight. And friends, Ahmed has asked me to pass on the following message to us all. Quote, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. Today, I stand with you, my brothers and sisters." Thank you, Ahmed. Ladies and gentlemen, in a more just world, we wouldn't be gathered here this evening. We'd be at home with our loved ones, having a barbecue or a swim, talking about the ashes, or out and about, enjoying a summer's evening at a time of year which so many of us treasure, which was traditionally characterized by joy. In a more just world, small children wouldn't have had to say goodbye to their parents this week, wives had to say goodbye to their husbands, or the parents of 10-year-old Matilda to their beloved daughter. In a more just world, we wouldn't have had to explain to our children why our Hanukkah gathering here at Bondi Beach was viciously attacked by monsters last week, purely for the reason that the attendees were Jewish, or why our synagogues, homes, or schools were the targets earlier this year. In a more just world, Jewish schools and other institutions would not require security more befitting a penitentiary than synagogues or retirement villages. And we need to ask how we've for so long accepted such arrangements as normal. And the answer to the current situation cannot just be more security and larger compounds. In a more just world, we wouldn't be trying to pick up the pieces and understand how last week took place. How after 2 years of escalating anti-Semitism and warnings from the Jewish community and ASIO that lives were going to be lost, that the terrorist attacks still took place. Because whilst we are all in shock and deeply sad, we are not surprised. We feared and suspected that this moment was coming. And whilst a catastrophe such as that which we experienced last week would be a tragedy if it was unexpected, how much more tragic is it that the loss of life occurred despite all the warning signs being there? And on that note, it cannot be disputed that we need a royal commission. That we need a royal commission which goes beyond New South Wales to get to the bottom of how this catastrophe took place. And that must include the Commonwealth. Friends, all of what I've just mentioned would all be the case in a more just world. But as we know, the world and the country that we inhabit is imperfect. As Jews, we are taught that part of our mission on earth is to fix the world, to rebuild a broken planet, and to heal the fractures of our society. As proud Australian Jews who love this country with every fibre of our being, this has always been our mission since 8 Jews arrived on this land on the First Fleet in 1788. We have always been hard-working, peaceful and loyal citizens of our beautiful country. And we are proud that Australia is the country of John Monash, Zelman Cowan, Frank Lowy and Jessica Fox. And this is why what's taken place is so disturbing. Because whilst Jewish communities throughout the ages have often found themselves living in unjust environments and subject to wanton hatred and violence, the injustice of the Jewish experience, up until 2 years ago, Australia was always the lucky country for Jews. But sadly, no more. We have lost our innocence. Last week took our innocence. And like the grass here at Bondi was stained with blood, so too has our nation been stained. We have landed up in a dark place. But friends, Hanukkah teaches us that light can illuminate even the bleakest of places. A single act of courage, a single flame of hope can give us direction and point the path forward, like a lighthouse in a sea of endless light. And that's all we've seen this week. Despite the incalculable tragedy which has befallen us, we have seen incredible manifestations of light. The mass outpouring of support from our fellow Australians and to the Jewish community and other Australians. The many thousands of Australians who have donated blood. And the snaking line of... Thank you. And the snaking line of mourners who have waited at the vigil to pay tribute at Bondi Beach. We've seen the bravery of first responders, the courage of those who saved lives last week, the dignity of those who were injured. Thank you. We've seen the strength and resilience of the Jewish community, our community, who refused to retreat or cower or become consumed by vengeance, but instead have become more determined to build back bigger and better than before, prouder of who we are and more united. And I should just say that if you haven't realised it yet, the terrorists have picked the wrong community to mess with, because we, the Jewish people, are unbreakable. Resilience is in our veins. And we, together with our fellow Australians, That's right. Am Yisrael Chai. The Jewish people live. Resilience is in our veins, and if you didn't hear me before, I'll repeat it. We, together with our fellow Australians, arm in arm, will keep coming and never give in. Friends, there's nothing preordained about the nature of Australia, our country. Countries don't just happen or prosper by default. They come together and flourish or fall as a result of deliberate choices. Of people stepping up and actively choosing what we want our society to look like. The choices of people like Ahmed Al-Ahmed or Geffen Bitton. The choice of all the people here tonight, not the person sitting next to you. We determine the country we are and the country we become. And this is the moment for choosing. There are nights in the life of a nation which hold consequences well beyond the moment itself. Tonight is one such night, and it's when the battle for the soul of our nation begins. This has to be the nadir of anti-Semitism in our country. This has to be the moment when light starts to eclipse the darkness. And in that spirit, with all the pain and grief carried by those most affected, the community comes here tonight to complete what could not be completed last week, the lighting of the Hanukkah menorah. Friends, may this be the moment. May the light of the Jewish community and the light of our amazing city and country shine brighter than ever before, and may our country return to normal. Happy Hanukkah. Thank you so much for being with us. Welcome.
We have just heard from David Ossip, the president of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies, addressing the crowd at Bondi Beach at the Light Over Darkness event, which took place on the last night of Hanukkah. And prior to that, we heard an impassioned speech from the former treasurer, Josh Frydenberg. To finish today, I will play a large chunk of the interview that Sherry Markson from Sky News did with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, thank you very much for your time. It's a devastating period in Australia. We've had funerals for a 10-year-old girl, Matilda, and a man who survived the Holocaust only to die at Bondi Beach. You personally implored the Australian Prime Minister Albanese in August, in a letter and in an interview with me, to take action. Did he ignore your warnings?
I'm afraid he did. I think the writing was on the wall. You saw the anti-Semitic attacks. First, the anti-Semitic incitement, these marches that called to globalize the Intifada. What does that mean? It means murder innocent Jews around the globe, wherever you can. And the radical Muslims, ISIS, and the Muslim Brotherhood fan it all the time. And you know that they go to the places where Jews are not protected. And I called for the, I call now, too, for the intensification of security arrangements around Jewish institutions. I'll talk about that a little more.
Yep.
Going actively against these terrorist cells and these radical Islamic cells, acting to put them in jail, stop them before they act. Yes, I wanted all that to be done. Mm. And I say now to the Australian government, damn it. Wake up. You don't need any more warnings. You've already received enough.
I want to talk a bit more about how we got here and then the solutions. Do you think Australia, the Albanese government's premature recognition of a Palestinian state, its anti-Israel rhetoric, often criticizing Israel more than Hamas, also, as you just said, refusal to act on hate chants, did all of this fuel the anti-Semitism that we've seen and indirectly lead to the attack in Bondi?
Look, I think that after October 7th, governments that recognized and called for a Palestinian state basically rewarded Hamas and rewarded the savage murder of Jews. That's how it was interpreted in the Islamic, the radical Islamic quarters. The message that was heard by this action was, kill Jews, you'll get rewarded. So that's the first point. I think there are other things that could have been done and should have been done, but it's, look, it may be late in the game, but better late than never. There is time for action now, and I hope there's this action, because it certainly wasn't up to now.
Mm. Well, let's talk about the action. I mean, the reality is Australia has let too many people in who have a hatred both of Western values and of Jews. Yeah. Our authorities, our intelligence agencies can barely keep up with monitoring them. So what would be your advice to Australia, to the government, to Albanese, on how to contain now the threat of Islamic extremism?
Well, there is intelligence, and you have to act on intelligence. Intelligence is worthless if you don't act on it. If you know that somebody is a radical Muslim, the last thing you do is give him repeated and multiple permits for weapons. That's crazy. You should see if this was done. If this was done, that's completely insane. There's no other word for it. On the other side, you know that Jews are going to be targeted, so have the ability to have armed guards. Look, in Israel, we foiled maybe thousands of terrorist attacks, but certainly hundreds, by having on-site people who had weapons. You cannot fight with your bare hands against somebody who comes with a Kalashnikov rifle or an automatic rifle. It's impossible.
Mm.
And just imagine if you had on that beach, on that Hanukkah gathering, if you had several armed guards, 10, 15, even 5, it would be over.
Mm.
That's what we've seen time and again in Israel, time and again. And that saves the day. And I think that's required right now. The world has changed. Recognize the change. You can recognize it before it hits these unspeakable, tragic proportions. And, you know, you see these Holocaust survivors, you see a 10-year-old girl, Matilda, and snuffed out. That can be prevented. But you have to take action on intelligence. You have to tighten security. You have to act against radical cells. And you have to be prepared also to stop these hate marches. You can't just say democracy and freedom is not the freedom to, the freedom to shot fire in a crowded theater. Mm. It's not the freedom to say, kill all the Jews. It's not. But that's effectively what the government of Australia has allowed. And that was bound to reach these tragic outcomes, just as I warned Prime Minister Albanese. Yeah. Look, it's important now. My point right now is take action now. Don't wait anymore. That's what the Jewish community in Australia was begging the government to do. Mm. And right now, I don't think anyone has to beg. I don't think you have to do anything except demand immediate action.
Mm. The Prime Minister yesterday announced some new laws. I mean, it took the death of 15 Australians, and even then that wasn't enough. He announced gun reform, gun laws. He had to be dragged kicking and screaming to hold a press conference on anti-Semitism. So he's announced some reforms, but the concern is that the action on hate preachers and hate speech are as it relates to promoting violence. Now, a lot of the hate preachers are very clever. They know not to explicitly promote violence. You just spoke about hate speech there and open support for terrorist organisations like Hamas, Hezbollah and others. So do you think this is where there needs to be stronger action on stopping the normalisation of just open support for terror?
For terror, for genocide, for wanton murder? Of course there has to be limits on this. And of course, there has to be limits on this in the public square, so to speak. But not only there; it's elsewhere as well. Yes, I think that's very important. I think there are also organizations, there are also individuals who are incited or inspired, if that's the word to use, who go and produce this savagery. But there are also organizations, and that has to be addressed by the government. Mm. I think that you should monitor who you let in. Well, you should also take action against those you've already let in, who are promoting this and are planning more murders. I heard that there were, I haven't verified this, so I'm speaking just from news reports, that there were five more people who were apprehended near Bondi Beach. I believe you were there on that day, Sherry, weren't you?
Well, just last night, there were four men apprehended in southwest Sydney, so another area, but my understanding is that they were arrested by counter-terror police because it was believed that they were en route to Bondi. We don't know what their intention was. It was a precautionary measure, but these were individuals that were known to the intelligence agencies. They'd flown from Melbourne. So this is still a live situation. The operation the investigation is continuing. But Prime Minister, a moment ago you mentioned acting on intelligence. The Australian government must act on intelligence. There were media reports that Israel did have some intelligence on this attack that was shared with Australia. Are those reports correct? Was there any intelligence on the Bondi attack specifically or something similar happening around Hanukkah?
No, I can't say that there was specific intelligence, but in my letter to Prime Minister Albanese a few months ago, I stated clearly, you're going to have this uptick. It's going to happen. There's no question about it. Look, where do these terrorists attack? You know, they try to attack us. They try to annihilate us on October 7th. And, you know, we roll them back. We fight this whole terror axis sequentially and fairly successfully. So these terrorists are now looking for the places where Jews are vulnerable, where they're exposed, where they're not sufficiently protected. That's why they chose Australia. That's why they chose Bondi Beach, because there's no protection there. So you have to increase, number one, increase your intelligence. We'll be happy to cooperate, as we do, with Australia and with others to give more intelligence. But you should increase your own efforts. That's the first thing. The second thing is act on it. Apprehend the suspect. Don't allow them to get access to arms. Take forcible action against terrorist cells. Cooperate with Israel and with other governments. Take action and don't allow this unfettered hate speech to go on in your streets, in your public squares, because because it's going to hit you too. And by the way, it starts with the Jews, but it never ends with the Jews. Mm. Anti-Semitism is a virulent disease, and it consumes the societies who don't fight it.
You just heard most of the interview that Sherry Markson from Sky News did with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Until next week, it's goodbye from the Israel Connection.